I'm Helen Chickering with BPR News. The subject of climate change just got hotter on the heels of President Trump's decision to withdraw the U.S. from the Paris Climate Agreement. Retired Navy Rear Admiral David Titley is an international expert on climate change and national security. He told me the decision to withdraw impacts more than the environment. Well, your visit is very timely, obviously. Right off the bat, I want to ask you your reaction to President Trump's decision. You knew this was coming, right?
Sure.
Decision to pull out of the Paris Climate Accord. Your thoughts on that?
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I tell people that the Paris Climate Accord is like the ultimate Rorschach picture. And we all know, you know, Rorschach pictures are, you know, you two different people can look at the exact same picture and see completely different objects. You know, sort of the realist pessimist in me says, you know, geez, if climate is such an existential threat like the previous president talked about, how can you have an agreement that is strictly voluntary, has no sanctions if you miss your targets, and you're only going to do whatever it is that you said you might want to do? Is that really going to solve what President Obama called the greatest threat of the 21st century? It seems, you know, we probably wouldn't treat cyber that way. We wouldn't treat bioterrorism that way or regular terrorism that way. The other part, if you want to look at the positive aspect, is the Paris Climate Accord was really for the first time where we had an agreement that people said, yeah, we can do this, and it's a step in the right direction. It was a globally recognized agreement by countries as diverse as China, Russia, the Middle East countries, the United States, Western Europe, Japan, Australia. We all recognize this is a global problem, and we need to take collective action to manage this risk. I think just about everybody who looks at the Paris Climate Accord would, you know, the way I think of it, it is, you know, if success is running a marathon, the Paris Climate Accord at least gets us to the start line. We're on the right course, and we probably run maybe 200 or 300 yards down the course. There's much more to be done, but at least we're going in the right direction. So that's the positive part out of Paris. As far as the United States withdrawing, I think it's, you know, you can come up with pretty bad scenarios on the climate side or really not so bad scenarios. I mean, we've seen, what, over 1,000 mayors and states and regions kind of say, hey, we don't really care what Washington said. We're going to try to do our part to reduce emissions. So, and of course, we have the economics that are well known that, by and large, natural gas is very competitive and in many cases cheaper to run a power plant with now than coal. And roughly, natural gas puts out half the carbon dioxide emissions per unit of power than coal, very roughly. So those trends are going to continue. So my guess is, you know, it may be somewhat harder for us to meet our targets, and our targets were ones we came up ourselves, and they were, if I remember correctly, a 26 to 28% reduction from a 2005 base level on our carbon dioxide emissions. But my guess is we'll get a fair ways there because we were going to get there anyways, really regardless of federal policy. I think the real damage from this was a agreement that was signed by all but two countries in the world. I'm sure it's going to get lived up to different degrees. Some will do really well, others not quite so well. But we very intentionally basically kind of took our ball and went home. I mean, if we were all on the third grade schoolyard recess lot, that's what we did. We took our ball and went home. And I thought the wording that the president used was very damaging. If you listen to his speech or read his speech, it was that the world was laughing at us and we're not going to be laughed at anymore. I don't think that's true. And that makes me nervous for how are we going to deal with the future, especially when you put it in context with, you know, really by all means, a disastrous European meeting just within that previous week, where we now have the leadership of Germany saying maybe we have to go our own way. So we are pulling out of trade agreements. We seem to go out of our way to antagonize our closest allies. We're now picking a fight with the mayor of London after he sustained a terrorist attack. we're pulling out of a climate agreement that nobody thought was going to solve the climate problem in and of itself, but it was collective action that we had all agreed on. There was really not that much cost to the country to do this, but we went out of our way to go and basically antagonize everybody else. Those are the parts that worry me much more than the technical, how many gigatons of carbon dioxide are we going to remove or not remove from the atmosphere.
You're coming to Asheville to give a talk to help people understand climate change from a military point of view with a focus on national security. What will you be talking about?
When I look at climate change, I look at it does three things to our security posture. And the first is it changes the environment, and basically what I mean that, the operating environment. If I was talking to a military group, I would say the battle space. It changes the operating environment where our forces are going to be working in coming decades. The Arctic is kind of the poster child for that. As the ice melts out, human activity is greatly increasing. I am pretty sure that the United States, as an Arctic nation, because we have Alaska, is not going to simply cede this new ocean to the Russian. That doesn't mean we need to go to war with anybody. I'm not advocating that at all. It doesn't mean that we need to raise hostilities or tensions, but it does mean that we need to be able to preserve our rights, preserve free trade, preserve freedom of use under international law of that body of ocean, just like the United States Navy and the Coast Guard do for all other bodies of water. That's one way on how which the very operating environment is changing.
You also mentioned threats to infrastructure.
Threats to our bases, threats to our training ranges, and kind of the Navy's kind of the poster child for this because the Navy bases tend to be at sea level. It's sort of what I call a ship thing. We're not like the Air Force. We can't just pack up and move to Minot, North Dakota or Asheville, North Carolina. We're going to be by the coast. And as that coastline changes, that becomes billions and billions of dollars to basically protect and harden the bases. And if the water comes up too much at some point, somebody's going to have a very difficult decision to make of, is this still viable or do we have to find another place to operate? The third and final effect for climate change on security is it tends to make bad places worse. And Syria is kind of the poster child for this. When you look at the catastrophe, the human and political catastrophe that is Syria, there's really a long chain of events that got us here. And it really starts in the 1970s. And I can tell you that there a lot of them are, frankly, nothing to do with climate. But there was also an unprecedented heat wave and drought in about a decade ago that climate scientists have linked with very high confidence to the changing climate. And that was kind of the proverbial straw that just took a really bad place, really unstable place, and pushed it into catastrophe because all the farmers, about 750,000 farmers, had just nothing left at that point. They flooded into the cities on top of the Iraqi refugees. It's Assad. It's not like he's taking care of his people. And his citizens became absolutely desperate along with the refugees, and it became basically a breeding ground and a recruiting ground for extremists such as first Al-Qaeda, Iraq, and now ISIS. I wouldn't say that climate change caused Syria, but it was one of those links, and this is what I mean by it makes bad places worse. So those are the three things. Change to the operating environment, it threatens our bases and training ranges, and climate change makes bad places worse.
Any insight on the conversations among military intelligence officials about how big a threat it is to national safety?
Well, there's actually documents out on the internet, public documents. This isn't anything, put out there by WikiLeaks. These are public unclassified documents. And anybody, any of your listeners can type National Intelligence Council, Climate and Security, and they'll pop right up. And it's just a 13-page document. It's written pretty well. It's got a one-page summary. And it pretty much talks about what I talk about. So in the sense of where is the intelligence community on this issue, they're pretty much where what we have just discussed. Now, what conversations are happening today in the Pentagon, that I can't tell you. I can only imagine, though, if I'm General Mattis, I've got an awful lot of things on my plate. I've got to figure out how to deal with this White House. I've got to figure out how to keep fundamental alliances together. I don't have any people because I can't even get the White House to approve who I want to work as my deputy and my key political appointees. If I was General Mattis, honestly, climate is probably not the number one thing on my to-do list. And I say that as a person who's really interested in climate.